If you're just now joining us, my gosh, you've missed something. Come back. Make sure you go back to thepowerhour.com and get this interview. Susan Lindauer from the beginning. Catherine's going to put up a commercial-free version. It's very important to share this. We are breaking through with the truth. Back to Susan. You know, everybody has that moment. You know, Kennedy, they know where they were when 9/11 happened. Where were you when you found out when? Okay, Susan, where were you and what went through your mind?
I was in the Tacoma Park post office, and the postal clerk came out and said, oh my goodness, a crazy pilot has just committed suicide. He rammed his airplane into the World Trade Center towers. And immediately I jumped and I thought to myself, oh, that's not what happened. This is the attack we've been waiting for. And I ran out of the post office. Everybody was in panic mode. I ran out of the post office, ran straight home, and I got on the phone I turned on the TV, and I'm watching the TV with my CIA handler on the phone, and we're both hearing at that moment that the employees of the people who worked in the Trade Center towers were being told that it was okay to go back to the building. And I was like, no! Richard Fuse and I were screaming at our television sets, no! 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 Don't go in there! Don't go in there! Stop! 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 Oh, no! This is a catastrophe! Get him out! Get him out! Get him out! It's going to explode! The building's going to come down! It's going to come down! And Richard says to me, he said, we're just hysterical. We're hysterical like you are. We're very unhappy. Richard turns to me, and he's on the phone. He says to me, Susan, he, in his emotion, revealed something very important. And he'd already talked to somebody at CIA before he spoke with me. And he said, Susan, how often do you see a person keyed up with their video camera? This is the day before cell phones, guys, where we have like cell phone video cameras on our cell phones. How often do you see somebody with a video camera queued up to record a car accident? It never happens, Susan. At best, you get a whiplash effect and the camera's unsteady and it's zooming around and people are, you know, you get a collision that is, you know, that the impact is jarring. Okay, he said, they were waiting. He said that a man and a woman. Now, I don't think it was the Naudet brothers, people. I don't. The Naudet brothers may have done it too. But there was a man and a woman who also recorded the first plane hitting the World Trade Center. And Richard said to me, Susan, he definitely said this, they are Mossad. The Mossad staged for the attack. And I said to him, I became hysterical. And I know there are a lot of people out there who really love Israel, and I'm just telling you what went through my head at that moment. I said, you mean to tell me that I've been looking for this blankety-blank attack? And I was swearing furiously, hysterically, screaming, watching the TV. The TV's on, they're playing the violence, and I'm screaming at the TV, and I'm screaming at Richard, you mean to tell me that we've been looking for this attack all summer long, and the Mossad knew, and they did not tell us? And I'm screaming, and the phone goes dead silent. Richard hangs up the phone. And I was like, and I called him back.
Oh, my God.
I called him back, and he said very calmly, he said, Susan, we must never discuss that again. And I said, but Richard. And he said, no, Susan, we must never discuss that again. And we never did. Yep.
All right, we don't have much time, and I want to get to the conclusion. Oh my God, this is unbelievable. Just to wrap it up, you think it was let it happen kind of thing, support of U.S. intelligence, probably Israel, Saudi Arabia. What do you think?
I think it's let it happen, make it happen. It requires both, because there was definitely advanced knowledge. I would later go on to get arrested on the Patriot Act, and I was held under indictment for 5 years. During this period, I was locked up on, some of this period, I was locked up on Carswell Air Force Base and threatened with forcible drugging to chemically lobotomize me with Haldol, Ativan, and Prozac so that I would be incapacitated. The other women in that unit who were chemically lobotomized were not capable of writing any, they were not capable of holding a pen or reading a book or processing any, or carrying on any kind of conversation. They could not speak in complete sentences, and that's what they wanted to do to me. And they wanted, they asked the court for permission to detain me for up to 10 years with no right to a trial or hearing so that I would be allowed to call witnesses to verify that I had even been a CIA asset. I was like, you know, I had witnesses ready to fly in from anywhere in the world to verify it. I had chiefs of staff from the Republican Party who were willing to come into court and testify for me. One of my old friends was Senator Grassley's. I love Senator Grassley. Some of these people, I really love them. His legislative director, Dean Zerbe, I was going to call him as a witness. These people knew my CIA handler. They knew my defense intelligence handler. I offered to have my defense intelligence handler testify in a closed-door hearing so that he could just clear the record and say, yeah, she's an asset. Yeah, she's being a, this is a pain for everybody. Stop this now. I just wanted them not to drug me and let me go home. And they were so frightened of what I would tell Judge Mukasey that they would not even allow that to happen. And frankly, Judge Mukasey was also hearing Larry Silverstein's insurance claim for $11 billion for the World Trade Center. And I was crossing, my attorney, my public defender attorney was crossing with their big hotshot Wall Street attorneys crossing paths, and I'd go in shackles and chains and an orange jumpsuit saying, Your Honor, we knew about 9/11. Don't drug me. Oh, my God. Don't. You can't. This is, I'm telling you the truth. And they would say, Your Honor, we are, gee. You know, and it turned, finally, a year and a half after my arrest, I was allowed one hearing. A year and a half after my release from prison, 18 months later, they finally let me have one hearing with two witnesses for 1 hour, for 90 minutes. And nothing like what the law allows. But in those, I called two witnesses. One was the chief of staff for Congressman Andrew Forbes of Long Island, who verified that, yes, indeed, I was an asset. I was a known intelligence asset. She'd known me for years. She knew my handlers. And she said, this is absolutely horrifying that you're doing this to this woman. Leave her alone. Thank you, Kelly O'Mara. And the other one was Park Godfrey, university professor at York University in Toronto for computer science. And he methodically broke down all of my 9/11 warnings to him as a civilian starting in April and May of 2001. He said, Susan told me about the 9/11 attack. For months, she told me in August that it was imminent and my family who lived in Connecticut should stay out of New York City until after the attack. She told my mother to stay out of New York City. She told my father to stay out of New York City because this attack was going to occur. So I, you know, Susan is telling you the truth about the 9/11 attacks. He said that he told the FBI about my 9/11 warnings in August, September of 2004, a few months after my arrest, and other people have told me that they told the FBI about my 9/11 warnings. The New York Times interviewed my CIA handler and my defense intelligence handler and Park Godfrey, and he said to me that they all told him about my 9/11 warnings. They did. They said that it originated from me. That they didn't try to say that it originated with Richard Fuse. They said, it originates with Susan. And that's okay. That's okay. I was like, well, it actually comes from you. He said, oh, Susan told us about it. Susan. But they at least tried to save me. They told the truth to the New York Times, and the New York Times printed a garbage story, fake news. The original fake news is the 9/11 story. truly the 9/11.
Susan, I think we got a little disconnected. You got arrested because you wanted to testify on some of the things about going into Iraq. We have to have you on again and to get into details about that, because that, I think that's so important. Iraq did not want it. They were willing to do anything. So
yes.
Forth and so on.
Tragic.
You were arrested in 2004. Yes.
It was
We only have about, I don't know, 6 or 7 minutes of airtime. We have a break coming up. I want to fast forward to today. We'll have you on again if you'll come on to get in details about that.
Be
very
honored.
Important.
Be honored.
Let's talk about today.
What's going on today,
people? We have a president. Go ahead.
No. I want to say this. That we have to support President Donald Trump. It is an emergency situation. The kind of chatter that you're seeing right now that's being held publicly about the deep state animosity towards President Trump is very much like the deeply reminiscent to me of the chatter that was private in the intelligence community before 9/11. I want to be very clear on that, except you didn't know about those conversations, and now you do know about those conversations because everybody's having them. But there is a move to go after our president, and we must be vigilant in defending him and protecting him, not because he's going to be impeached, but because we have to be afraid of false flag operations. We have to be afraid that there will be a false flag against the United States for the purpose of removing the anti-deep state president. The anti-establishment president, and in its it is never more dangerous than when they are going down. They are going down. We must defeat them. Okay, it is dirtiest. The fight gets dirtiest when the bad guys are losing, because then the bad guys have nothing to lose by pulling out all the stops. And I expect any number of dirty tricks that the deep state would launch against Trump before November. To try to take him, like an October surprise. It's going to be an anti-Trump October surprise by the deep state. I'm convinced that's going to happen.
This is Donald Trump on the day of the attack.
Donald, you're probably the best known builder, particularly of great buildings in the city. There's a great deal of question about whether or not the damage and the ultimate destruction of the buildings was caused by the airplanes, by architectural defect, or possibly by bombs or aftershocks. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, it was an architectural defect. You know, the World Trade Center was always known as a very, very strong building. Don't forget, that took a big bomb in the basement. Now, the basement is the most vulnerable place because it's your foundation, and it withstood that. And I got to see that area about 3 or 4 days after it took place, because one of my structural engineers actually took me for a tour because he did the building. And I said, I can't believe it. The building was standing solid and half of the columns were blown out. I mean, so this was an unbelievably powerful building. If you know anything about structure, it was one of the first buildings that was built from the outside. The steel, the reason the World Trade Center had such narrow windows is that in between all the windows you had the steel on the outside. See, the steel on the outside of the building. That's why when I first looked, and you had big, heavy I-beams, when I first looked at it, I couldn't believe it, because there was a hole in the steel. And this is steel that was, you remember the width of the windows in the World Trade Center, folks? I think, you know, if you were ever up there, they were quite narrow. And in between was this heavy steel. I said, how could a plane, even a 767 or 747 or whatever it might have been, how could it possibly go through the steel? I happen to think that they had not only a plane, but they had bombs that exploded almost simultaneously, because I just can't imagine anything being able to go through that wall.
There you go, President Trump right there. Susan, glad to have you back. One, a little awkward, but this is great. We just heard Trump
talk
about 9/11.
My president got it right. He got it right, and he did it right out of the bat. I am so impressed by Donald Trump. You know, we are not giving this man enough credit. He is far ahead of the rest of us, or at least he keeps up with the best of us, okay? And I am so impressed by this statement. On the day it happened, he absorbed all the facts that were available to the public, and he quickly cut through the garbage, and he saw incisively analysis with with his direct personal experience and knowledge what really happened. And he is right. There is no way an airplane could have done that. But it required explosives in the basement especially. And remember what I said about the parking garage in the basement of the World Trade Center. 4 or 5 trucks arriving every night, 3 a.m. to 5 a.m., arriving after the janitorial crews, leaving before the New York AAA personalities, as I call them, the stockbrokers coming in to see Tokyo, etc., and Europe. These guys, there was somebody coming in there for about 10 nights in a row from about August 23rd until about September 3rd, a week before the attack. I am so proud of my president. Today, on his 9/11 speech, he's getting grief from the Democrats and the liberals. They're trying to tear him down and knock down his statements because he's pumping his fist. He is angry. He is pumped up about these issues. And I'm proud that he's my president, okay? I don't feel that Donald Trump may be the only one who did not betray America with regards to 9/11. I have to say that.
Let me ask you this, because our audience, I wonder this. When we saw Syria, everybody knows Assad did not use chemical weapons on his own people, children, whatever. It's ridiculous. But yet, Trump has been forced to acknowledge that, and they even bombed some airstrip, what have you. We know there was no Russian collusion. When Trump was in Russia, he says, well, there's no collusion. We know this. He comes back to America and says, well, we know there was some kind of meddling. It's like is somebody toying with him?
Yes. He is being forced he's being boxed in by the deep state to force him to go along with some
explain
part
that.
Of what they're
explain
doing.
That.
Well, it's actually, I think everybody can see it. I think that, you know, this is one time it's quite self-evident that the force of the media, the force of the Democrats and the hysterics. Look at the Brett Kavanaugh hearings where this guy is one of the most highly credible, reputable Supreme Court choices ever. He's superior. And you've got these crazy Democrats rushing in, screaming, taking over Senator Grassley's office. I don't know if you know that. 30 or 40 of them poured into Senator Grassley's office and refused to leave.
Yes.
Pounding on the windows at the Capitol. We have not seen something like this before. So Trump is walking, as we all know, walking a very fine line. They're very worried about the November elections. I happen to believe that if we stand strong and don't break, everybody must go vote. If you're a patriot, if you love this country, you've got to vote for the future of this country. And it is an all critical election. The Democrats are all fired up. We've got to be resilient and persevering. They are a wave, but we are a wall. The red tide and the blue tide, but we are a wall of action as well.
And I'm ready
to jump in on this on to defend Trump. I love this man. I really do. I don't feel in any. I think President Trump is the most exciting president of our generation.
I would agree.
20
I mean,
years.
That goes without saying.
Yes, most exciting.
Yeah,
president.
That goes without saying. Let me ask you this then. I mean, what you said. I mean, I get what you're saying. I'm along with most of what you said. Why doesn't Trump just come out in front of the camera? There was no meddling. There was no collusion. This is ridiculous. This is asinine. Is it because he doesn't want to embarrass the intelligence communities? Is he does? No, he's been going back and forth, Susan.
But he does say it. And when he says it, everybody beats the crap out of him. They beat him up and then they push him back. There's so much pushback on him that he has to walk it back a little bit. But the Syria thing, let's talk about Syria for a minute, because you said something really important.
Okay.
A lot of people don't know that the first chemical weapons attack a year ago, that was the night that President Trump was having dinner with President Xi Jinping of China, and he ordered the bombing of Syria. But they only struck an airport. Okay? They only struck an airport that was being used by the Russian military and the Syrian military. And they didn't strike anything else. What people do not know is that at that moment, the John McCain crowd, the Hillary Clinton, John McCain, Obama crowd, was pushing for 150,000 U.S. soldiers, boots on the ground in Syria, and President Trump was refusing to do it. He said, we're going to be strong, we're going to be powerful, but we're not going to deploy the United States military into Syria. So he had a few tiny little bases that did get established, but 150,000 people? Oh, no, no, no. Maybe 2,000. Somewhere between about 2,000 U.S. soldiers are in Syria. But that is a compromise from the 150,000 soldiers that John McCain was demanding. And frankly, for all of you who love John McCain, I have to tell you, he was such a warmonger. There was never a war that he didn't want to fight. He did support ISIS. He did finance ISIS. A lot of terrible things happened to our planet because of John McCain and Hillary Clinton. And so the idea that the Democrats are complaining about Donald Trump on Syria, you know, I think that it took a lot of courage for Donald Trump to stand up to everybody and say, we're not going to do it. We're not going to do it. I'll give you something, but we're not going to have the war you're looking for.
Well, even when that happened, I mean, that's kind of what went through my mind, and our audience was very upset. I'm like, what did he bomb? I mean, he really didn't bomb anything. It's almost like a show just to appease people. I mean, that's what I thought at the time.
Exactly.
So you're kind of confirming what I was thinking.
And also,
is it so? I mean, we're sitting here listening. Hold on. Oh, this is very important. Go ahead. Sure.
No, okay. The other thing that you don't know, maybe, is that a few weeks later, some of us immediately rushed in. I did. I know other people did. Rushed intelligence reports to President Trump and the White House that the White Helmets were responsible for that attack. And I personally sent President Trump social media posts on Twitter from the White Helmets leadership in Arabic with translations underneath, and I said, check this with the CIA with the intelligence. They'll confirm these translations. Okay, and this was prior to the attack of the White Helmets announcing that to get ready for the propaganda media to start on this particular day that the attack occurred, the chemical weapons attack occurred. Okay, and. What you don't know is that about 3 weeks or three to six weeks later, those White Helmets were killed in a special strike. So President Trump got the people who did it, and he listened. You didn't hear about that at all, but he got them.
There are certain events, like we said at the beginning, that all you need is the date. You don't even need anything else. No more need be said. It's such an emotional impact. And how that has been used. And I hope now that you've heard Susan's story a little more in depth and detailed the months before that, the date of, the official story is a complete lie. Then you have to ask your question, why? Why did they lie? Why are we being told? How is this being used? The Patriot Act. And we didn't even get the details about her arrest. She was arrested on the Patriot Act. No charges for a long time. They threatened, like she said, basically a chemical lobotomy to shut her up because she wanted to go in front of the commission to report on what she knew and the connections.
Yes. Let me clarify one thing. No charges. They were secret charges. This is even scarier than you've ever in your worst nightmare could possibly know. Secret charges. I was never allowed to know what I was accused of doing. Secret witnesses. I was never allowed to know who would be testifying against me. I was allowed discovery of, I found out that they had 28,000 phone calls. They had captured all of my faxes. They had 8,000 emails. But I was never allowed to know what actions constituted the so-called crime of treason. The few details that were given to us were easily debunked. I was accused, I'm not even making this up, of, I'm not even making this up, receiving $100, not 100,000, not 1,000, $100 from an Iraqi diplomat who left the country in March, and he was not in the United States, anywhere in the United States, in the month of December when he allegedly gave me, when I allegedly signed a receipt for $100 to pay for train fare to New York City to visit him. Now, why would I, why would he give me a, why would he demand a receipt in the first place? But his name was wrong. It turned out that there was a, that I had a paper trail of emails that I had received an invitation from diplomats in Malaysia to visit at New York at that period of time. And I said I wasn't going to be, I was not able to attend New York in that period of time. So the whole thing was just smashed to high heavens. They refused to drop the charges anyway. On September 8th, I was sent to prison. September 8th, Colin Powell gave an interview that nobody, to Barbara Walters on 2020, that no one from the CIA came to warn him the Iraqi exiles were fabricating intelligence to justify the war. That was September 8th. No mid-level people came to him. September 17th, 9 days later, the Justice Department rubber-stamped that I was not competent to stand trial. September 23rd, 15 days after that interview, I was ambushed in court. It was the very first court hearing since my arrest in March of 2004. So from March 2004 to September 23rd, 2005, I had not one single court meeting, not even one. They did not want me to speak. They wanted me to shut up. But I was, my boyfriend had a job at the Pentagon. He got it after he moves in with me and we're living together. He gets a top secret security clearance and a job at the Pentagon with a salary just under six figures. So we're keeping food on the table. The Pentagon is sending messages home through the generals saying, we're so sorry. We do not want them to do this to you. We told them to stop. We're, Susan, please remember who you are. Remember the soldiers in the field. Now, as an intelligence person, I can tell you that during a wartime period, the Pentagon, I was at Pentagon, I loved my life. I loved being an intelligence asset, but I knew the rules, and you know that a 5-year-old child who watches the James Bond movies knows the rules. You are not supposed to talk. When you've got soldiers in the field, the highest priority is to protect the bodily safety of the soldiers, the morale of the soldiers. How does it affect the allies who have the opinions of the United States policy? How does it affect the occupied peoples who are being, you know, crushed under the U.S. military boot? How does it affect the opposition forces who are attacking U.S. soldiers? And so even if you don't like the politics of what's going on, you know in advance, I gotta say, this is intelligence, and they don't tell you to, I mean, this is not a joke. This is when intelligence becomes the most important top secret that there is. So I understood the rules. I had done one thing that was of critical importance. I had requested to testify on Capitol Hill before Congress, and John McCain and Trent Lott had been assigned to head up a Blue Ribbon Presidential Commission on Iraqi pre-war intelligence. And I went through proper channels contacting them saying, I am the chief CIA asset who covered Iraq at the United Nations. I have some things to tell Congress. So I did all the right things. But I was anti-war as well. And I opposed the war, and I said, we did a lot of really good things, which you need to know about. 30 days later, I woke up to hear the FBI pounding on my door with a warrant for my arrest. And when they arrested me, they didn't say, you've been charged with XYZ. They said, you are being charged on the Patriot Act. And that's it. That's you, Susan Lindauer, you are under arrest on the Patriot Act. And I said, what did I do? And they said, your attorney will explain it to you when you see him in Baltimore or in New York. And then they told me that Judge Michael Mukasey had been, they said, we have been instructed to tell you that the judge in your case is Michael Mukasey. They said, everybody wants you to know it's Michael Mukasey. And I said, I was so shocked. So shocked. I was like, what are you telling me? I don't understand. What does that mean? And he said, that's the judge who's most famous for trying the first World Trade Center attack against the blind sheik, Abdurrahman. And I said, and I was in the FBI sedan in handcuffs, and they told me that. I began to laugh because that was the very first case that I ever got involved with. I gave advance warning to the Tunisian embassy 2 days before the attack on the first World Trade Center. And so when I heard that Mukasey had my case, I knew that I was going to be saved. How's that for a story?
My gosh.
Nothing is left to chance on this stuff. Nothing ever. There's no coincidence in the intelligence business. Stand up for President Trump. We've got to fight for him now. They're coming for our president. Be afraid. Be vigilant.